Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Magic. The word conjures up visions of magic wands and abracadabra, Harry Houdini and Harry Potter, legerdemain and prestidigitation. It's mysterious, it's uncanny, it's supernatural. But what if I told you there is a scientific basis to magic? The Science of Magic is a new documentary that looks at just that, the psychology and neuroscience that lurks behind even the simplest card trick. This fascinating documentary goes right to the source, the magicians and magiciennes doing their tricks and white-coated scientists watching them intently. It's written and directed by documentary filmmakers Donna Zuckerbrot and Daniel Zuckerbrot, known for their deft handling of magical themes. It's premiering on Sunday, March 18th on CBC's The Nature of Things. I'm very happy to have here in studio co-director and a bit of a magician himself, Daniel Zuckerbrot, to tell us about the science of magic and maybe even reveal some of his tricks. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Okay, so old school magicians used to say the hand is quicker than the eye. And your documentary looks at those two factors, the hands of the magician and the eyes of the watchers, that form the basis of most magic tricks. So let's start with the hands. What role do the hands play in the deception of magic?
I think it's very varied, the roles of the hands. And you know, there's a young Canadian magician, Maddie Gilbert, who has no hands and performs very, very complex sleight of hand or sleight without hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find him certainly on YouTube. He's a well-covered performer. So it varies a lot, you know, but the focus of our film, you know, we look at, as you said, the science of magic and what's behind the magic. But the real focus is the other way around. It's on scientists using magic. So, you know, when it comes to, is the hand quicker than the eye? Well, they've discovered really interesting things that were unknown to psychology previously by drawing on the practical knowledge that magicians have about using their hands and their eyes to deceive your eye and your brain.
And one of the things you did was you had scientists track the eye movement of a watcher of a magic trick. Can you describe that?
Sure. We had a young woman, Billy Kidd, who's originally from Edmonton, lives in London, and she did some great magic for a little crowd at the University of London and out in the quad, or I think it's called the quad, the grassy knoll. And as you say, Gustav Kuhn, who's one of the leading investigators of these kinds of things, hooked up one of the bystanders, one of the people watching, with a pair of special glasses that track their eye movement. And he later showed it to the magician, to Billy, and she was just thrilled.
But what did they find?
Well, what she found was that her magic was working exactly as planned, that she was able, through the use of her hands and her eyes and her gestures and her staging of the trick, to control where the audience was looking.
And the basis of magic, in my mind, is distraction. You're trying to get people to focus on the wrong thing, or the right thing, but not the crucial part.
That's right. And that's a crucial distinction, right? Because
yes,
if they're distracted and focusing on the wrong thing, then it's just confusion. And the great Canadian magician, widely considered the greatest magician of the last century, Di Vernon, said, magic is not confusion, right? You know, and so if you're watching the magician perform and you don't understand what's supposed to be going on, where the ball is, what's he doing, you know, what's that? I don't remember what the card was. That's not really very interesting magic. So, but as you say, it's a question of, a big part of it is a question of controlling attention. What they've discovered, for example, from that, is that the eye isn't what's fooled generally. You know, Gustav, who does the experiment with the glasses, we don't see it in the film, but he did another experiment where he threw a ball in the air and had it vanish. One, two, three, and it goes up in the air and it disappears. And they track people's eye movements with exactly those kind of glasses. And what they found was The eye wasn't fooled. The eye all the time was looking where the ball actually was. So for the eye, it shouldn't have disappeared because it was looking right at it.
So it's not the eye, it's the mind, the
attention.
Brain.
And what they discovered and what they're exploring is how there's these two separate but connected mechanisms that control what you see. So it's not just a question of where your eye is looking. It's where your brain is looking, where your attention is looking.
So one of the topics you deal with in the film is something called choice blindness.
Right.
What is that? What is choice blindness?
Choice blindness. This is one of the, I think, the strangest parts of the film and most astonishing. Thomas Strandberg from Sweden, who's involved in the study of choice blindness, does this experiment. And he redid it for us in London. He did a little demonstration of it. He originally had done this at the first presidential debate between Clinton and Trump, where the sides were very polarized. And, you know, they did it outside of the place where the debate was held at Hofstra. And they went into the crowd with these surveys on a clipboard, a sheet of paper. And it had Trump's picture on one side and Hillary's on the other and a list of leadership qualities. And you were supposed to put your mark further towards Trump or further towards Hillary, depending on who you thought had this attribute, more of this attribute. And then they interviewed people about what choices they made. So imagine in this crowd of yelling people and all that, they go up to somebody who has a Trump sign painted on their face, have them fill out this thing. And as you would imagine, all their choices were way over at the Trump picture. But as they're filling it out, Thomas or one of his colleagues is standing there with their own little piece of paper, and they're marking things more towards the middle on their piece of paper. And then using an old mediums trick from the 19th century, they switch their answers for the other person's answers. So the person fills out their answers. Thomas takes the clipboard from them and looks at it, turns it towards them and says, so why did you feel, you know, you hear you say this. Now, these extreme answers are now suddenly moderate. They're all sort of neutral. And the people interviewed went along with it. Without any hesitation, they said, you know, so why do you say, you know, you're a Trump supporter. Clearly, why do you say, you know, Hillary has, you know, this leadership? Well, you know, Hillary has more experience. And, you know, I think we have to acknowledge that. And then they asked them, like, why are you so, you know, you're very neutral or very open-minded. They called it open-minded. Why are you so open-minded? And they said, well, you know, I feel strongly that Trump would be a better president, but I think we have to. And this happened without exception.
So do you think, I mean, you don't deal with this directly in the film, but these, not magic tricks, but these fake news and polling and things on Facebook, do you think they're actually making people change their minds?
Well, that's a really interesting question. What's so powerful about this, according to the scientists who are studying it, is that it's your opinion. You're being confronted with what apparently is your own opinion. So you don't have to be persuaded because you think this is what you just said.
Even if it isn't.
Even if it isn't. So it's very convincing, more than, you know, some external source telling you something where you might debate it. And like I say, almost without exception, people went along with it. They gave explanations. They rationalized it after the fact. And the effect lasted. Unfortunately, it didn't last indefinitely. The studies they've done show it doesn't last indefinitely. But you got to think, if somebody does that and realizes they've given these answers and been blind to their own beliefs, that person has to have changed a little bit. You know, you can't quite be as dogmatic once you've had that experience, I think. I think that's really magical in an unexpected way.
Another thing about magic is in my mind, it takes three forms. One is the one-on-one or small group, like a card trick. Second one is, I'm not sure what it's called, like on a podium or a table, a platform, right? And the third one is, and that's more like pulling a rabbit out of a hat, whatever. And then the third type is the big on a stage, sawing a woman in half, making an elephant disappear.
Right.
And I noticed you covered all three over the course of that hour-long documentary.
Yeah.
What do you think is going on now? I mean, it was getting bigger and bigger, but now that most people take in everything on their smartphone, What do you think is best suited to these tiny, tiny spaces?
Right. And those are great questions. And those are classic distinctions, right? Magicians talk about close-up magic or micro magic. They talk about platform magic or parlor magic, to use the old term.
Parlor magic, yes.
Right. And they talk about, stage illusion. The change is, because of what I think, there has been a change, a huge change in the kinds of magic that people, young people, are consuming because of YouTube, because of they're watching things on their smartphone. And so the magic that's being done now tends to be designed to work that way. It works, it's very visual, it's very quick, and it works on YouTube. It would be hard to repeat it in any other situation other than on a screen locked into that particular shot. But it's very popular. The other big change that's come about in recent years is what's called cardistry. So as a young fellow, when I was doing card magic, because it was very much the same as probably had been done since at least the 19th century, maybe earlier. And it had a certain rhythm and a certain thing. And while there were people who did what we called flourishes, you know, making the pack jump from hand to hand, making cards spin around, people like Ricky Jay who would throw the cards enormous distances. There was also the major school of thought was that you shouldn't show off and you should hide your skill with the cards. Let the magic happen and let people not attribute it to your trickiness. It was more magical. Well, that's changed, and there's a huge surge in popularity of this art form. Really, it's new. It's called cardistry, and it's kind of juggling with cards. You can find lots of it online, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. These people do things that were undreamt of 10 years ago, 15 years ago. You know, in all the history of magic, nobody thought of doing anything that crazy.
But it's the sort of thing that shows up really well on YouTube.
It looks great.
So finally, you are a filmmaker, but also, I think, a magician at heart. Now, magicians will do any trick they can to make the trick work, which, of course, is kept a secret. People also talk about the magic of cinema. How everything you're seeing on the screen is somehow magical. So I want to know in this one, by the way, the tricks you show are quite flabbergasting and surprising, but do you ever resort to camera tricks to make a magic trick happen on your film?
Absolutely not. What you see, and what we went to great lengths to do this, it could have been much easier, obviously, we used camera tricks. But we went to great lengths to ensure that whatever you see is what you would see if you were there in the audience.
So the magic is real, but fake,
that's
but real.
Right. That's right. And of course, we cut in, we zoom in so you can see clearer, right? Which you wouldn't be able to do if you were sitting in the theater. Your eyes can't do that. The camera can. So we did that so you have a better view of what's happening. But all the editing, all the camera work is done to make the magic more visible, to let you see what's going on. We have lots of very tight shots of the magician's hands as they're doing their things. That connection between magic and cinema is deep, right? All the early, the Lumiere brothers, all those guys who started making films, the first motion pictures, you know, these 30-second long things, were magicians. And they were done as part of, a regular part of performances that included magic and this new kind of visual magic. And there's been that connection all through the history of cinema.
And finally, we just have a few seconds, but I totally coincidentally, Monday, earlier this week, they premiered a new American network show called Deception. What do you think of that?
I love that stuff. I'm a sucker for it. When I was young, there was a short-lived series of a similar
it was
idea.
Called Magic, was
yeah,
it?
Something like that, or yeah. The Magician with Bill Bixby.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Thanks so much for talking with me. A fantastic documentary.
Thank you.
Daniel Zuckerbrot's new documentary, The Science of Magic, is showing on CBC's The Nature of Things on Sunday, March 18th at 8 p.m. This is Daniel Garber, the movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, CulturalMining.com.